Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Robert Mueller's appearance on Capitol Hill might have been highly anticipated, but was it highly effective? Well, it depends on who you ask, of course. Some congressional Democrats had hoped the former special counsel would articulate a clear case for impeachment. Did he move the needle on that? Well, Republican Congressman John Ratcliffe of Texas says yes, Mueller moved a needle, just not in the way Democrats may want.
I think the main takeaway today is the impeachment balloon got popped completely today.
Well, that put House Speaker Nancy Pelosi in an interesting position yesterday. After Mueller's testimony, she said that this is about, quote, the Congress, the Constitution, and the courts, and we are fighting the president in the courts, end quote. Pelosi added that if Democrats move forward with impeachment, they will do so if they have the strongest possible case.
Why I'd like it to be a strong case is because it's based on the facts, the facts and the law. That's what matters. Not politics, not partisanship, just patriotism.
This hour on Point, Robert Mueller's testimony and the impeachment question now. And you can join us. Did the Mueller hearings change how you're thinking about the possible impeachment of the president of the United States? Has the balloon popped, as we just heard? Or do you expect more developments to come? Do you want Democrats to act now or put this issue to rest? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, we'll start first today in Washington with Paula Reed, CBS News White House correspondent, focusing on the Justice Department and legal affairs as well. Paula, it's always great to have you.
Well, thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Okay, so first of all, give us your take on where you hear Nancy Pelosi and congressional Democrats now on the impeachment question. Did anything change substantially from Mueller's testimony yesterday?
It doesn't appear that it moved the needle. What's interesting to me, though, is they're still keeping the door open just a little. And that's surprising to me because when we talk to voters, when we look at our polls, nobody seems to have a real appetite for this. I mean, certainly there are Democrats, a group of Democrats, supporters and voters who would like to see Democrats push forward with this issue. And of course, within the party, there is various opinion. But for the most part, people are focused on kitchen table issues. And there is concern that if Democrats try to get too wrapped up in this, they're not paying attention to the real issues. And they do also risk giving the president what he wants, which is a fight. He wants to show reporters that he is the victim of, quote, presidential harassment. He thinks yesterday went well enough that he will be able to convince voters of that.
Okay. Well, we have a listener on Twitter, Paula, who has said, I don't think Pelosi will budge. She's too afraid to make a mistake. And in this listener's opinion, the president will win 2020 no matter what. So Pelosi should start impeachment proceedings. Congress should still try, the listener says, to do its job. They're so disappointed in America. I mean, did you hear Nancy Pelosi using any more language around sort of the principles of the power that Congress has as a co-equal branch of government yesterday?
Yeah, and she's talking about this has to be based on the facts, and if the facts support a case, we should pursue it. But let's be clear, it's more complicated than that, right? It's not just about the facts. It's about 2020. For Democrats, it's about taking back the White House. For Republicans, it's about keeping the White House. And for Democrats, they want to be if they want to be successful in pushing forward their agenda, they certainly need more House, more seats in the Senate. They probably want some more in the House. I think it's too simplistic to say we're just going to let the facts lead where they may. And there's a danger inherent in focusing too much on this issue of impeachment when there are so many voters who want to see them more focused on health care, on jobs, on infrastructure, on other issues.
Okay. Well, but in that case, though, they still brought Robert Mueller to testify before two House committees yesterday. I mean, what do you think was the real goal then in doing this?
I'll be honest. I'm not sure. Because even before this hearing, we had talked to people who worked with the special counsel, the former special counsel, who suggested there were concerns about how he would perform under this kind of circumstance. So they said, look, he's not quite the guy he used to be. And we saw in that performance, there were moments where he struggled to recall facts in his investigation. He often asked for questions to be repeated. And he largely, Republicans were allowed to repeat often unsubstantiated claims and attacks against the origins of the investigation without him pushing back. He didn't want to fact check that. He didn't want to get into it. So when you look at this back, you look at Democrats and you think, Some of you guys knew this would be the kind of performance. Didn't you see this coming? What exactly is it that you hope that this would achieve? I know Adam Schiff has said that he wanted Mueller to bring the report to life. Anyone who's watched one of Robert Mueller's previous congressional hearings, I don't think it's fair to expect him. Anyone would expect him to bring something to life. He'll give you facts. He'll give you gravitas. But it's not like it's going to be a riveting audiobook of his 400-page report. It's really unclear what it was they thought they were going to achieve here.
Well, I mean, he's always been a very straight arrow.
And a yes-no guy.
Right. And I have to note that for most of us could not hope to hold a candle to the kind of service that Robert Mueller has provided to this nation over the course of many decades here. So I think it was a little bit of a shock. A lot of people were discussing sort of Mueller's affect yesterday, and you're saying that members of Congress sort of knew that this might have happened.
Yeah, based on my reporting, you know, this is something we've been reporting out for a few weeks because we had heard this from people who had worked with him, and no one's making any diagnosis or saying anything too extreme. They're just saying, hey, he's not quite the person he used to be, so we're not sure how he would perform under the circumstance that for anyone, especially us mere mortals, is very stressful. And he's done this many times before. Mm-hmm. And over the course of these 5 hours, the performance was at best inconsistent. And there were certainly moments where we were pretty surprised that he wasn't more familiar with the intricacies of his report and sometimes just had trouble really coming to crisp conclusions.
Yeah, but it still behooves us as Americans to look upon the totality of his career with the utmost of respect. But let's just play a little bit of sound here from a couple of moments in yesterday's testimony where Mueller was asked about the impeachment question. So first, here's Representative Mike Johnson from Louisiana. He was the last Republican to question Mueller during the Judiciary Committee hearing yesterday, and he asked about impeachment.
Our colleagues on the other side of the aisle just want political cover. They desperately wanted you today to tell them they should impeach the president. But the one thing you have said very clearly today is that your report is complete and thorough, and you completely agree with and stand by its recommendations and all of its content. Is that right?
True.
Mr. Mueller, one last important question. Your report does not recommend impeachment, does it?
I'm not going to talk about recommendations.
It does not conclude that impeachment would be appropriate here,
I'm not going to talk about that issue.
That's Robert Mueller responding to questions from Representative Mike Johnson, Republican. Democratic Congresswoman Veronica Escobar of Texas quoted from the Mueller report, where it's written that Mueller did not want to, quote, potentially preempt constitutional processes for addressing presidential misconduct. So Escobar asked Mueller to elaborate on those processes.
What are those constitutional processes?
I think I heard you mention at least one.
Impeachment, correct?
I'm not going to comment.
Okay. That is one of the constitutional processes listed in the report in the footnote in Volume 2.
That's Democratic Congresswoman Veronica Escobar questioning Robert Mueller. Paula Reed, hang on here for just a second because I want to hear some thoughts now from Jill Winebanks. She also joins us from Washington. She was a special prosecutor during Watergate. She served as general counsel of the United States Army from 1977 to 1980. Jill Winebanks, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you back on the show. So let me first of all ask you, you heard those two moments there directly addressing the impeachment question. Do you think Mueller's testimony is going to have any effect on how Congress, or Democrats, I should say, should move forward?
I think that it will encourage them to continue the investigation, as he clearly was suggesting. And although he did not say the word impeachment, it is clearly laid out in the report as the right way to go. He has concluded that he can't indict because of the Office of Legal Counsel, not because there's not enough evidence, because he made clear that the evidence of obstruction is there and that it satisfies all the legal requirements, as does the opinion of 1,000 former federal prosecutors, including me. And so they could indict if he weren't the president, but he is, so they're prevented, and therefore they have to go with the alternative remedy of impeachment.
Right.
And I think that people saw the facts laid out there, that the report has been misrepresented by Attorney General Barr and by Donald Trump. And so it's not surprising, you were talking about that he declared that this was a great day and he was, you know, happy and cleared. Well, of course he said he was cleared. He said that the report exonerated him when all you have to do is read any one of a number of times in the report that it says, we did not exonerate the president. And so he falsely claimed that yesterday was a great day. I think enough facts came out yesterday about the obstruction and the specific acts of obstruction that the next step for Congress is to call the fact witnesses. I don't think having a summary witness like Mueller would ever have had the impact. If even Leon Jaworski or Archie Cox, who were at the top of their game and really smart and very passionate speakers, even they wouldn't have known the underlying facts in the same way that team members would.
Well, so Jill, can I just ask you a quick question here? Because you heard Paula Reid earlier say that she's not sure what the Democrats' point or hope was in having Mueller testify. And I hear you just now say, well, there were facts enumerated here. But is that what the American people heard yesterday? Because they also heard Republicans mercilessly attacking not just the special counsel, but the entire process of the investigation as well.
Well, let me answer it this way. I think that people who watch Fox News heard exactly that and only that. They heard the diversions of the Republicans. The Republicans did not address at any moment the facts laid out in the report. They did not challenge the evidence of obstruction that is laid out. They did not challenge that all three elements of the crime of obstruction were satisfied in at least five instances.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't address the fact that stonewalling Congress is a separate and impeachable offense, which was the third article of impeachment against Nixon.
Yeah.
So, yes, the people who watch Fox and Breitbart and other conservative news medias will be like the Amash supporter who said, I had no idea there was anything negative in the report.
Mm. Well, Jill Weinbank, stand by for a moment because we just have to take a quick break. And Paula Reid, hang in there with us. We are talking about the impeachment question now in the aftermath of Robert Mueller's testimony yesterday. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the impeachment question now, following Robert Mueller's public testimony on Capitol Hill yesterday. Paula Reid joins us today. She's CBS News White House correspondent, focusing on the Justice Department and legal affairs. And Jill Weinbanks is also with us. She was a Watergate special prosecutor. And Paula and Jill, if I may, I want to play two more moments from yesterday's hearings to sort of describe the different cases that we heard being made by Republicans and Democrats. So first of all, here's John Ratcliffe, Texas Republican. He's on both the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committees. He was on Fox News yesterday talking about the hearings.
You can't impeach a president on obstruction charges when the special counsel admits that they applied a legal standard to the president that has never been applied to anyone in the history of American jurisprudence before, which is something that Bob Mueller admitted today.
It's Congressman John Ratcliffe, Texas Republican. Now, in his opening remarks yesterday in the House Intelligence Committee, Chairman Democrat Adam Schiff said the Mueller report tells a story, and he laid out what he believes that story is. It's one of, quote, disloyalty to country, about greed, and about lies. And then Schiff said this.
That disloyalty may not have been criminal, constrained by uncooperative witnesses, the destruction of documents, and the use of encrypted communications. Your team was not able to establish each of the elements of the crime of conspiracy beyond a reasonable doubt. So not a provable crime in any event. But I think maybe something worse. A crime is the violation of law written by Congress, But disloyalty to country violates the very oath of citizenship, our devotion to a core principle on which our nation was founded, that we, the people, and not some foreign power that wishes us ill, we decide who governs us.
That's Adam Schiff, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, just yesterday. Paula, let me start with you on this. When I listened to Schiff's opening statement, what I heard there was Schiff trying to lay the groundwork for impeachment proceedings, which are inherently political, right? I mean, we can talk about what may be revealed information-wise through the subpoenas that the House Democrats have in the courts, but ultimately, impeachment is a political process, and that is what Schiff is driving at here with his talk about betrayal and disloyalty and citizenship. Was he effective in doing that?
This was actually Adam Schiff at his most effective, because over the course of this investigation, he has gotten out over his skis a few times. There was one instance where he said, of course, we have evidence of collusion. The Russia investigation report came out, and that was not the case. What's important here in his remarks is that he is trying to highlight one of the key themes the Democrats wanted to highlight through this, which is that, hey, guys, Russia meddled in our election. Even special counsel Robert Mueller says this is the one of the most significant issues he's ever seen. And the White House doesn't appear to be doing anything about it. Now, Mueller would go on to testify that, in fact, the Trump campaign was designing some of their communication strategy around some of the ways that Russia was meddling. I think what Democrats and Republicans, too, have to kind of rectify is, do you want a political sort of retribution solution? Do you want to go after impeachment or try to, you know, throw Democrats under the bus for attacking the president? Or do you want to do something that's forward-looking? How do we prevent this? Just last week, a senior White House official told me Russia continues to meddle. They say the Trump administration told him not to knock it off, but they continue to do it and will into the next election. Specifically, they are focused on social media and sowing discord on issues like race and guns specifically. So when they talk about how they want to address this issue that Adam Schiff just laid out, impeachment isn't the only option on the table. And in fact, I think there are legitimate questions about what is best for the democracy and how do you remedy what happened in 2016? Is impeachment really the best remedy, or is it trying to get together with some sort of bipartisan solution to actually deter Russia and other adversaries from doing this again?
Jill Winebanks, what's your take on that?
Well, I agree with most of what Paula said, and she said it so well, but I don't think this is an either-or choice. A lot of legislation was passed during the Nixon impeachment process and could be, and I certainly agree that legislation to protect our elections is essential today. It has to be done, because if anything is clear from yesterday, it's that there was Russian meddling, that it was in favor of Donald Trump, and that it has to be stopped, and nothing is being done to stop it, and that they are currently, right this minute, as we talk, they are doing it. I would, you know, take a lawyer's disagreement with whether Schiff, first of all, I agree he was completely brilliant yesterday, and he laid out a very compelling case. But when you say that he was out over his skis saying that there was evidence of collusion, remember that collusion is not a crime. I would substitute the word cooperation. And clearly, we saw yesterday the cooperation between Russia and the Trump campaign, both in terms of the Trump campaign sharing information with the Russians and then following the lead of the Russians in targeting and voter suppression. And so I think you might be able to say there was collusion, even if there wasn't, as he said, a provable crime. And just because you don't have a provable crime, for example, if a defendant is not convicted, he is not declared innocent. He is simply declared there wasn't enough evidence to convict you. So that's where I would come out on that. And I think that the support for impeachment will follow actual evidence from the witnesses that people can see and judge for themselves, just like the Manafort juror who said this whole investigation is a hoax. But I saw the evidence against Manafort, and I voted to convict him on all 18 counts.
Right.
So they may think it was a hoax, but when they see the evidence, and the evidence summarized by Mueller is not the evidence. Don McGahn's testimony is the evidence. Lewandowski's testimony. Annie Donaldson's testimony. That's evidence. That's what will move the needle.
So those are the fact-finding hearings that you wish to see. Now, in fact, Jill, a while ago, a month or so ago, we had you on the show to talk about this issue in anticipation of Robert Mueller testifying. And at that time, you said something very similar, that you wanted to hear more fact-finding hearings
in
order for there to be an education process for the public. And at that time, you also said that, you know, it's not just Mueller, but you had hope that if and when Mueller testifies, that he corrected misrepresentations, in your mind, that came from Attorney General Bill Barr, and that too was part of the public education process here. Did you hear Mueller do that yesterday?
Yes, I did, because he said, I did not exonerate. He didn't specifically get to the point where Barr says, he turned it over to me to make the decision. I mean, clearly that isn't the case. I didn't hear it as clearly as I would have liked to have heard it. But yes, I did. The one point where I would say, although I never was supportive of Mueller being the person relied upon, and partly because he is not a passionate speaker, and that's what we need to hear, is delivery with conviction. But I do think we heard enough from him that it was very effective, and that when you combine it with the actual witnesses, that people will be persuaded. That's what happened during Watergate. Support for impeachment was way lower than it is even in the new dropped numbers. And approval ratings for Nixon were off the chart high. It was like over 60%. And as the hearing started, the numbers inverted, and it dropped to more than a majority supporting impeachment and almost no one supporting and giving approval to the president. So I do believe facts matter, even in this era of a multiplication of media outlets, so that we can all live in our own bubble and not believe anything, you know, other than what the president says if you're watching Fox News. And I think even in this era, there will be enough moderate or independents who will listen and who will be swayed.
Right. Well, Jill Wine-Banks joining us from Washington. She was a Watergate special prosecutor and served as general counsel from the U.S. Army from 1977 to 1980. Jill Wine-Banks, it's always great to have you. Thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you, Meghna. It was great being with you.
So, Paula, I want to get to a caller or two here, but let me just quickly ask you, because Jill just said that she wants to hear more fact-finding hearings with key witnesses out of the Mueller report or involved in this issue. Are we going to have those? I can't keep up with all the hearings. So are they coming?
Not if the White House has anything to say about it. The White House is really testing the limits of executive privilege to try to keep most of those witnesses, prevent most of those witnesses from testifying. And even if they do testify behind closed doors or in an open session, they're trying to limit what it is they can talk about. So even though House Democrats are newly emboldened with their subpoena power, for the most part, the White House is just trying to blunt these investigations, which is part of why they really haven't yielded very much so far.
Okay, well, let's go to the callers. Kathy is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi. I actually thought that Mueller's testimony yesterday did change my mind. When his report came out, I thought that they should go for impeachment. But now I think, as he was a brilliant prosecutor that didn't force the House's hand to go to impeachment immediately, but would allow these fact-finding hearings.
Mm-hmm.
That will lay out the facts and bring more people to understand that what happened was just wrong.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for your call. So let's hear a response to that from John Eastman, who joins us now from Orange, California. He's a professor of law and community service at Chapman University Fowler School of Law and founding director of the Claremont Institute's Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence. John Eastman, welcome to you.
Thanks very much, Meghna.
So respond to what you heard Kathy say just there. Do you think that perhaps Mueller did some kind of unexpected favor for Democrats?
No. The one thing that came out of the hearing yesterday that I think was the most stunning revelation is the fact that Mr. Mueller believed that inquiry into Glenn Simpson's meetings with Natalia Veselnikova, she's the person that met with Donald Trump Jr. in the infamous Trump Tower meeting, that Glenn Simpson from Fusion GPS met with her both the day before and the day after that meeting, making it pretty clear that meeting was a setup. Now, why is that significant? Because Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS had been hired by the Clinton campaign to create the opposition research that led to the Michael Steele dossier on Trump. That dossier, we now know, had among its sources two high-level Russian intelligence agents, Vyacheslav Trubnikov and Vladislav Surkov. Trubnikov had been the former Russian foreign intelligence chief, and Surkov was a close advisor to President Putin of Russia. Those were the sources, or among the sources, for the Michael Steele dossier. Yeah,
Christopher Steele.
Christopher Steele dossier that was hired, commissioned by Fusion GPS on the payroll of the Clinton campaign, illegally, by the way, because they laundered money through the Perkins Coie law firm to pay for that opposition research without reporting it on their federal election campaign forms. Now, Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS meets with Natalia Vasnevskaya the night before and the day after the Trump Tower meeting. And Mueller was asked directly about that because his charge and I'm looking at the original May 17th charging order to investigate Russian interference with the 2016 presidential election and related matters. It's not limited to the Trump campaign's connections with Russia. It's all of the Russia interference. Mm. And the notion that Mr. Mueller thought that Glenn Simpson meeting with this Russian agent to set up the Trump Tower meeting to create this narrative that it was the Trump campaign that was working with Russia, when in fact we now know it was the Clinton campaign that was working directly and had paid for opposition research from Russian sources. The fact that Mueller thought that was beyond the scope of his authority demonstrated without doubt that this was a partisan investigation from the get-go. And that was a stunning revelation. And I don't know why more people are not talking about it, because this is the biggest scandal in American history. That was what led to the FISA warrants that allowed the Obama administration, who was supporting Hillary Clinton, to spy on the opposing political campaign during a presidential election. That's the significant disclosure that we got out of yesterday's hearings, and you all aren't talking about it at all.
Well, I'll talk about it.
Yeah. So, okay. So, Paula, I'm going to let you do that in just a second. But Professor Eastman, if I may. You just laid out a lot of names and events here. Can you just summarize briefly, for those of us who haven't been able to read into this in that much detail, why you think this is significant? And then, Paul, I'll hear from you.
The Clinton campaign and the DNC funneled millions of dollars to their law firm, Perkins Coie. Among that, hundreds of thousands of dollars went to Fusion GPS to pay for opposition research. That was illegal because it was not properly disclosed on the campaign finance forms. You can't launder money through your law firm saying it's for legal services when it's for hiring Fusion GPS to conduct opposition research. Mm-hmm. Fusion GPS then retained Christopher Steele to do an opposition report on Mr. Trump. We now know from information released in Public Records Act requests from last May that among Mr. Steele's sources were two high-ranking Russians, the former intelligence head, Trubnikov, and a close advisor to President Putin, Surkov. These sources is what are sourced in the Steele dossier. That dossier is then used to get the Obama administration to obtain FISA warrants to spy on President Trump's key campaign advisor.
Okay,
this is stunning.
So, Paul, I'm going to turn back to you on here to respond to this, but I'm also right now looking at an October 2017 New York Times report that reminds us that the Washington Free Beacon, a conservative website that was funded by a New York hedge fund billionaire Paul Singer, conservative website here, first hired the firm Fusion GPS in 2015 to explicitly unearth damaging information about Republican presidential candidates, including Mr. Trump. And they stopped funding Fusion GPS in 2016, and then the Clinton campaign took it up from there. So it's a long and complicated backstory, but Paula, go ahead and start giving us your response. We just have a minute and a half before we have to take a quick break.
Sure. Yes. The Clinton campaign hired a SEAL to create this dossier. The FBI got it. They were able to corroborate parts of it, but not all of it. It was used as one part of the evidence to support a FISA application. But before we allege a Republican conspiracy or that someone's trying to protect Democrats, remember, you had Attorney General Jeff Sessions is the one who appointed William Barr. He was overseen by a lifelong Republican, Rod Rosenstein, and Mueller is, of course, a lifelong Republican. There is an investigation into the origins of the Russia probe, but to suggest that he somehow missed the fact that Democrats were coordinating with Russians, he laid out 200 pages of contacts between the Trump campaign and Russia. And if anyone had an incentive to sort of investigate Democrats and Russians, it would be all of these Republicans who have overseen and led this investigation into links between the Trump campaign and Russia. We can't lose sight of that.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break here. We are talking about Robert Mueller's testimony yesterday and the impeachment question now. We're joined today by Paula Reid from CBS News, and John Eastman is also with us. He's a professor of law and community service at Chapman University Fowler School of Law. We'll be taking a lot more calls after the break. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about Robert Mueller's testimony yesterday and the impeachment question now. We're joined today by Paula Reid. She's CBS News White House correspondent, focusing on the Justice Department and legal affairs. John Eastman is also with us. He's a professor of law and community service at Chapman University Fowler School of Law and founding director of the Claremont Institute's Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence. He also testified before the House Judiciary Committee earlier this month on Lessons from the Mueller Report, Part 3, Constitutional Processes for Addressing Presidential Misconduct. Now, Professor Eastman, I do take your point about Fusion GPS, because indeed many members of Congress, many Republican members of the two committees yesterday specifically asked Mueller about this as well. But I also want to acknowledge that we've only got 15 minutes left in the show, and I want to be able to bring in callers as well. So I want to just refocus on some of the things that Democrats tried to get out of yesterday's hearings and get you to respond to that. So first of all, here is some tape from a moment where Democrat Adam Schiff, again, chair of the Intelligence Committee, questioned Robert Mueller about the extent of Russian efforts to sway the 2016 election or influence the 2016 election in favor of President Trump.
In short, your investigation found evidence that Russia wanted to help Trump win the election, right?
I think generally that would be accurate.
Russia informed campaign officials of that?
I'm not certain to what conversations you're referring to.
Well, through an intermediary, they informed Papadopoulos that they could help with the anonymous release of stolen emails?
Accurate.
Russia committed federal crimes in order to help Donald Trump?
When you're talking about the computer crimes in the charge, yes, in our case, absolutely.
The Trump campaign officials built their strategy, their messaging strategy, around those stolen documents?
Generally, that's true.
And then they lied to cover it up?
Generally, that's true.
Robert Mueller responding to Adam Schiff, chair of the House Intelligence Committee. So, Professor Eastman, respond to that. If Democrats move forward with building a case for impeachment on both the, quote, disloyalty that Schiff talked about and what Mueller found regarding Russian activities, would they have a case?
No. Look, first of all, I think Adam Schiff's comments, I mean, he delivered them well. I will concede that. But they were so hyperbolic and extrapolated to the worst possible interpretation of events that are in large part fairly innocuous. And this is going to the collusion part, the volume one. And one thing that is absolutely clear is on the collusion issue, Mueller did find that there was not evidence of collusion or illegal contacts between the Trump campaign and the Russians. Yes, the Russians attempted to influence the election. We attempt to influence elections for other foreign nations as well. But one of the other questions from the Republican side that you haven't played is, was there any evidence whatsoever that any of these efforts by the Russians altered a single vote? And the answer to that is no. And it's not because they preferred Trump over Clinton. Look, the Russians are notorious for trying to create chaos in our election system and in our governing institutions. And so no matter who they wanted to win the election, their ultimate goal was to create chaos, which this continuing farce of a set of hearings is proving that they succeeded. And this is why I go back to the Glenn Simpson piece. Because if Mueller really understood his task, or more appropriately, his staff, because I think it was pretty clear that Mueller, from the hearing yesterday, that Mueller was much less involved in the day-to-day operations of this investigation than the highly partisan staff that had been hired to conduct it. And it became clear that they thought their job was to identify Trump connections with Russia, not Russia connections with anybody in America attempting to influence the election. Because you could not have omitted the Glenn Simpson meetings with Veselnitskaya.
Veselnitskaya.
Yeah, thank you. If you understood your task to be looking at everything the Russians did to try and influence the election.
Yeah.
I mean, meeting with a paid Clinton team member the night before and the day after the Trump Tower meeting, and to say that's beyond the scope of the report is stunning. And this is why I think the whole thing is such a charade.
Yeah. Well, John Eastman, professor of law and community service at Chapman University Fowler School of Law and founding director of the Claremont Institute Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So Paula, just respond quickly there. I mean, Professor Eastman feels strongly.
He talked for a while, so I can't clean all that up in 30 seconds. Let's focus. Who is Natalia Veselnitskaya, right? She was a Russian lawyer with ties to the Kremlin who offered the Trump campaign dirt on Hillary Clinton. She's the one who met in Trump Tower with Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort. This is one of the instances where the special counsel was really looking to see if there was coordination. Did they actually get some dirt? They did not. And should they have known that they shouldn't have been meeting with this person? This is a key meeting. So even if we want to focus on how she may have met with other people with ties to the Clinton campaign, okay, but we can't leave out the fact that it is confirmed through testimony from the people in that room that she met with the Trump campaign. They willingly met with someone with links to a foreign adversary who is promising dirt on their opponent. And furthermore, in terms of the scope of Mueller's investigation and what he should and should not have been looking at, that was all up to lifelong Republican Rod Rosenstein. If Robert Mueller wanted to look into something else or needed to, it was up to him. So again, you had a Republican leading this investigation to suggest that someone was preventing Robert Mueller from looking at the misdeeds of Democrats, alleged misdeeds. Well, that was up to Rod Rosenstein. And right now, the Justice Department is looking into the origins of this investigation and whether there were any political motivations at the outset.
Paula, I mean, you follow the Justice Department, obviously, very closely. And we just heard Professor Eastman reflect some sentiment that we heard from congressional Republicans yesterday about the, quote, highly partisan nature of this investigation. And I just want to get your sense of what you think about that, because I had always thought that one of the sort of bedrock ideals or principles that the Justice Department operated on was that they didn't ask their lawyers about their partisan leanings, that if you were a Republican or a Democrat, it didn't matter. You were supposed to do your job with the rule of law in mind above all. And it seems like we're moving into a world where there's a presumption is that that just isn't true anymore.
Well, who is in charge here? Right. It's been a Republican FBI director, a Republican deputy attorney general, a Republican acting attorney general, a new Republican attorney general, a lifelong Republican in Robert Mueller. Everyone's talking about how this is a group of angry Democrats. No, the bosses were all lifelong Republicans. And yes, this has become hyperpartisan because it appeared, particularly from the fact that about a dozen people in the president's inner circle kept lying about their contacts with Russia, that the president or people in his inner circle could have exposure. And lo and behold, they did. Six of the president's associates have been charged. Five of them have been convicted, including his campaign chairman, deputy campaign chairman, national security advisor. There was an incentive to attack this investigation, to paint it as politically partisan. when in fact the yield on this investigation, the number of people who have pleaded guilty to various crimes, most of which were lying, either to banks or the government, it's pretty significant considering how long he was at it.
I mean, wouldn't then the charge of being politically partisan also apply to the current investigations going on into the origins of the Mueller investigation?
Well, I think we have to remember that people who are carrying out the Office of Inspector General, that's the internal watchdog inside the Justice Department, they looked into the origins of the whole handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation, too. And they came out with findings on that. They had some questions about people who behaved inappropriately, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, for example. But they did an analysis of that, and it didn't appear to be tinged with any sort of partisanship. Now they're going to do the same group is doing an investigation to the origins of the Russia probe. Now, Attorney General William Barr has also appointed a U.S. attorney to look into the origin, sort of a separate kind of investigation. But again, if you start painting everything with a partisan brush, it's easy not to pay attention to facts, the biggest one being Russia attacked our election, right? Yeah. And even the president has refused to really engage too much on that actual substantive issue, instead focusing on attacking Robert Mueller and his team.
Mm. You know, I'd be interested to hear from folks within the Justice Department who've worked across different administrations about how they feel about this moment, that everything seems to be politicized rather than looking at the matter at hand through the rule of law. But Paula, you know, I have made our listeners wait for a long time, so I'm going to roll through a couple of them in the last few minutes that we have. All right. So let's go to Steve, who's calling from Jamestown, Kentucky. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead, Steve.
All right. I was calling. I think it's a disgrace the way everyone's trying to throw Donald Trump under the bus due to the fact that, number one, he has done what he said he was going to do in his campaign. He is making this world a great America. He has also been the first president to set foot in North Korea. And I just feel my father was a Democrat until the day he died. And I was a Democrat until Ronald Reagan came in.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter. Although Donald Trump came in, I would much rather have seen Donald Trump with his campaign compared to Hillary. That's why he won.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for your call. So a supporter of the president there, thinking he's saying he's still doing a great job. Let's go to Roger, who's calling from Scottsville, Virginia. Roger, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for having me. Love your show. Think you have a cool name.
Thank my parents for that. But go ahead, Roger.
Boy, the previous caller just represents what I don't understand. Before Trump was ever elected, which he really wasn't elected, didn't win the popular vote.
He did win the Electoral College, but we won't relitigate that. Go ahead.
I just thought he seemed like such an I don't know if evil is the word, but disgraceful, human being. He didn't represent him. He is not someone that I can see as representative of the United States. I don't want him running around being a jerk to the world. And that's, to me, what he's doing. So I want to know how Tariff Man gets away with a lot of the things that he does, because it doesn't seem like, this is not an oligarchy or whatever kind of garchy you talk about where, one person rules.
So do you think Democrats should push forward with impeachment?
Well, so impeachment, it's this long process. I don't know that anything valid's ever come out of it. It definitely, what we've got going on in the White House now surely demonstrates that anyone else is a jerk on the job, 6 weeks, they're gone. Uh-huh. There's got to be a better way to you don't perform the job the way you need to, you're gone. We have some work to do in democracy or federal, whatever this place is supposed to be.
Well, Roger, thank you so much for your call. Okay, so a little spectrum there of opinions, Paula, we heard from our listeners. But I want to just switch gears here for a moment, Paula, and play a section of the press conference that the president held after Mueller. Mueller testified. You know where I'm going with this.
I have a feeling I know.
Because you tried to ask the president a question. And we'll just play this and you can explain it a bit. But here's Paula Reid trying to get in a question to the president about things that were heard during the Mueller hearings.
No, he didn't say that. Again, you're fake news, and you're right at the top of the list also. Let me just tell you, go back to what, it's not what he said. Read his correction. Read his correction. If you read his correction, you'll find out. That's why people don't deal with you, because you're not an honest reporter.
That's President Trump exchanging words with Paula Reid. So, Paula, just tell us about this moment really quickly. What were you specifically asking the president about?
Sure. He came out and projected this air of confidence following the Mueller hearing, called it a great day. And I just said, hey, Mr. President, Robert Mueller said you could be charged still with crimes related to obstruction once you leave office. And what is your response? He denied that Mueller said that. Then he pivoted and he said, no, he said it, but he recanted it. Right. Read his correction. Robert Mueller's correction had nothing to do with whether the president can be charged after leaving office. Mueller said twice, yes, right. Clearly, yes, well, he can be charged.
So I mean, because the president was conflating two different moments of the hearings, right? He was referring to questioning that or answers that Mueller gave to Congressman Ted Lieu. But you were specifically asking about this moment, and we have it, where Republican Congressman Ken Buck of Colorado asked Mueller if the president could be charged with a crime after leaving office.
Could you charge the president with a crime after he left office?
Yes.
You believe that he committed, you could charge the president of the United States with obstruction of justice after he left office?
Yes.
So, Paula, I mean, we've been talking about impeachment, but why is it that you want it, and you usually get one shot at asking the president a question in these press gaggles. Why did you want to focus on that?
It's incredibly significant because the president has been so aggravated about the fact that this Russia investigation has been looming over his White House for the entire time he's been here, looming over his family, his business, his campaign, everything. He felt like it was, as he was quoted in the Mueller report, he felt like it was an attack on his legitimacy. They want to say case closed right now, right? But that's not true. He still faces possible legal jeopardy. Now, the statute of limitations for this and for possible campaign finance violations is 5 years. So if he's reelected, it's unlikely he would be charged. And politically, it's unlikely that a new president is going to want to come in and send the previous president through any sort of criminal proceeding, right? That just doesn't seem like the way you would want to proceed. But the fact is, this question will continue to hang over him, and it's going to be asked of 2020 candidates, what would you do? And it just reminds people that part of the reason charges were not brought here is that he's the president of the United States, and the Justice Department says you can't charge someone. But Robert Mueller seems to think, yeah, it's possible he could be charged when he leaves.
I'm seeing here, we've got a minute left, Paul. I'm seeing here that today, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff sharply downplayed the prospects of removing President Trump through impeachment, saying the only way Trump would leave office at this point is, quote, by being voted out. That just crossed today from Adam Schiff. What do you think about that?
It's probably a pretty good strategy. Again, it goes back to voters. Voters don't want this country being put through an impeachment hearing with the evidence that that Robert Mueller laid out that many Americans sort of see in shades of gray or black and white. But it appears that their best strategy is to focus on these kitchen table issues, push through to the election. And if Democrats want to punish Donald Trump, well, get him voted out. That's really the best way. But if you want to focus on impeachment and in the sort of retaliatory strategy, it may backfire in 2020.
Well, Paula Reid, CBS News White House correspondent, focusing on the Justice Department and legal affairs, joining us from Washington. Paula, it's always great to have you.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daum, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller, with help from Alex Rees and Sydney Wertheim. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.